Good morning!
Today is a very special day.
It's a very special day.
Why is today a special day?
Because today is
EGIM. That's right.
Today is...
Thank God it's Monday.
Thank God it's
Monday.
Wait, is that a real thing?
Is that a real thing?
Why, yes, it is.
Google it.
You can Google it. It's worth a Google.
I don't need to.
I believe you.
You know what else I just realized?
It's showtime.
TSN 1200.
Well, hello, how you doing, everybody? Welcome to the show, or if you're just, that's if you're just joining us, welcome back. If you have been with us for a bit, it's Monday. Hope you had a nice weekend. We've got a hot week ahead. Humidex readings well into the 30s starting today, and even hotter toward the middle of the week. We're still in the month of May, we'll remind everybody. So we've gone from, and I'll also remind everybody that a little over two weeks ago, it was snowing here in Ottawa. Yeah. So as they say, if you don't like the weather, wait 10 minutes because it'll change.
Yeah, and feels like, and let's hope with where things are trending as we're allowed to get outside a little bit more, just couldn't come at a better time. And just to walk around or drive around the city, see the leaves and the trees are out, the grass is green, you're out golfing, and I think this has been a nice stress relief for a lot of people.
It has. We had some overnight showers too, needed some rain, so but things have dried out, and as we said, should be a pretty warm day. We're already at 20 degrees at 8:11. In the morning, but we're Canadian, so that never stops us from talking about hockey, right? Which we do each and every weekday morning at this time. Presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. We say hello and a good Monday morning to Pierre Maguire. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
Let's talk golf. Good morning, JR. Yeah. Hello, Sean.
Good morning, Pierre. Happy Memorial Day.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Now, did you watch the match, the big charity event yesterday? What was your kind of takeaway from it all?
Tom Brady's not an 8 handicap.
No, he's not.
No way. Impossible. I don't care.
Simmer's a huge fanboy, though. He insists that Tom was doing that on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that was made for team. Pierre, you're behind the scenes. Come on. You know he was told to shank it, right?
No.
Not that many times.
There's no way that ball keeps going right if you're an 8 handicap like that. Ask Kevin Hame. He's the swing doctor. He'll tell you there's no possible way he's an 8 handicap. That being said, the birdie was amazing when he hit it and got it to spin back. It's almost like the ball had magnets in it.
Yep.
Maybe it did.
I thought it was really fun.
Yeah.
I really did. I enjoyed it very much because it shows you that you could be the best athlete in the world. Golf is hard.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Really hard.
And you know what? As a spectacle, if that's what I tuned in at the start, Pierre, and I was like, I'll probably stick with this for a little bit. I'm not too much into exhibition golf or whatever. I was in for the entire thing. And yeah. It's that, and you talk about it all the time with your television production, going between the benches, the pulling back of the curtain to allow viewers the experience of what it's like to be athletes. That's so important. Like, you know, with the video games right now can allow people to play the games almost if they want to. But that aspect of how the athletes talk amongst themselves and how they, you know, when they're reacting to shots that are made, that's what events like yesterday, that gives us the perspective we never see any other time.
Boy, that's well said. I agree. 100% agree. That was one of the things that really hooked me, was the fact that you were going behind the scenes. You were hearing what they were going through. You were seeing their flaws as athletes. You were seeing you saw the flaws of the technical difficulties. And you got to believe TNT did everything they could to make that an unbelievable production. But because of the weather, I would imagine, because of how many moving parts there were, there were a lot of flaws in that broadcast. That being said, they did a really good job. I was really impressed. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, me too as well. Now, speaking of pulling back the curtain or whatever, and you guys at NBC have been doing lots of stuff over the years. You started between the benches here in Canada, of course, with TSN. But what sorts of things can fans, what sorts of things are they talking about at the network level as far as where televising hockey may go sometime, either in the short term or the longer term?
Good question. There's a lot of moving parts in this one, too, because nobody really knows what's going to be allowed and what's not going to be allowed. You know, I was watching yesterday, and they had interviews on the course, yet there was a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit of social distancing. You saw three people in the tent, you wouldn't call it a booth, but the tent, and they were separated by a wall, a clear wall, so they could see one another. So I don't really know, to be honest, what's going to happen.
I meant sort of more post-COVID, Pierre, not necessarily
oh, okay.
while we're still on this, yeah.
I would say post-COVID, you're probably going to be looking at more and more player involvement, more and more coach involvement in terms of information that could be relayed back to the viewing audience.
Could we see a point where coaches are mic'd? You know, and I know I know there's a lot.
That would be a dream.
Yeah.
I don't know if that will ever happen.
Right.
Do you think at some point, though, Pierre, the NHL will open up? And if it's not in-game, and I know we've had some specials when it comes to the outdoor game, but do you think, hey, there's got to – every NHL team, their fan base, would love to see behind the scenes in the locker room, and other, even on practice day, practice days?
You know what? They're trying, and I think they're getting better. The LA Kings do a really good job. I don't know how many people watch their games, but the LA Kings do a real good job of having a camera in the room. There's no microphone. Columbus has done a very good job with this. On their home broadcast, having a camera inside. It's almost like a robo-cam in their room, but no audio yet. So I think teams are starting to warm up to that. But, I'll never forget when Sam Flood and Dick Ebersol approached me in 2004 during the Stanley Cup Final in Tampa about coming to do this inside the glass situation. They asked me, what do you think about doing that? Do you think you could broadcast a game from there? I said, I know I can. But I can tell you right now, the NHL will never go for it because they just don't want anybody down there. And they said, leave that to us. And they were the ones that were the impetus to try to create that, and it worked. But, they're going to have to take their time with this because I'm not sure there's that appetite to really get that much behind the scenes. But we'll see.
Do you think now, moving it more into the short term, and so when and if hockey does come back, do you think that the NHL would be more open to experimenting with some things television-wise while in these upcoming playoffs? Because, hey, we're in uncharted waters here.
For sure. One of the things that will happen if we do come back, and I'm 99.9% sure that this will happen, is camera angles will change. In terms of where cameras are, because you won't have people sitting in the stands, so you won't have fans being obstructed with their views. So I think you're going to see experimentation with camera positions. In fact, I know you will. It just comes down to where those cameras are going to be posted, but I do believe that will be one of the big things coming out of this.
Yeah, and I don't know whether you can do this with hockey. You probably can't. NFL games, that camera that's above the field, that's strung from all four corners,
yep,
that gets in behind the offense.
Yep.
Boy, I tell you what, I went on a kickoff. As it follows the team that's kicked off down to the other end, and you see the guy coming back at you. I mean, that is so cool. That angle of being that eye in the sky above hockey, watching it move up and down the ice, like, it'd be totally foreign to us because we're used to the center ice camera, but I think that would be pretty cool. But obviously with pucks being flipped up in the air, I don't know if you could actually get away with that.
Well, we actually have it during the Stanley Cup playoffs. NBC does.
Right.
We use that significantly. There's another camera they want to try to deploy that's called a rabbit cam, and that would be something that would run up and down the dasher. And you would get the perspective of how fast the player's going. I don't know how well that would work, but that's something they're talking about too. But we've deployed that camera you're talking about, JR, in the playoffs before. And you can, because you can raise it. The operator of that camera, obviously it's a robotic camera, but the operator has to keep it pretty high. And there are actually rules that if the puck hits the camera on a clear out,
right,
the faceoff comes outside the blue line.
Well, go back to the World Junior. With where we're going to be at economically and just overall to continue to sell the sport, Pierre, do you think at some part as part of a partnership and explaining, hey, this is going to grow the game and make more money for the players, do you think the NHL has to get to a point where they start telling the players what to do versus asking them? Because the easy thing when you're asked is, I don't feel like doing it.
Well, I think that's a good point. The one thing I would say, though, is I think the players are really amenable to doing a lot of things. They really are. I'll speak on behalf of the players right now. The spirit of cooperation amongst the players towards TV networks in particular has been phenomenal. I can just tell you that they are willing partners. They really are. I think it comes down to the managers and the coaches and the owners more than anything else, if you really want to know the truth. They don't want a lot of they don't want their players to be sidetracked. They don't want their players to lose their focus. So I think that's one of the things that you're going to have to, one of the hurdles you're going to have to overcome. But the players have been amazingly good and strong partners in terms of trying to bring more energy to broadcast.
I personally think one thing we've learned in all of this, and this has nothing to do necessarily with sports, but just society in general, with how quickly we've had to adapt to the new reality of whether it be work from home or everything else around it, the human being is able to adapt very quickly if needed to. So I'm just wondering in terms of, as you just spoke about there with sports, well, players, you know, coming, hey, listen, just do it. Just go ahead and do it. You'll get used to it. And you may, it may happen quicker than you think.
Yeah, no, I think that's, again, I agree. Everybody's trying to adapt here. That's one of the things that I think is really impressive about society is once it comes down to an urgent situation, people can find a way to adapt. You know, adapt and overcome is the motto of the U.S. Marine Corps, and it works pretty well. It has for a long period of time, and I think that's one of the things in society that people have really learned is to adapt and overcome, and I think you're spot on when you talk about that, JR.
All right, so the NHL Players Association over the weekend, Pierre, did sign off. All 31 team player reps voted, as we talked about with you on Friday. It ended up being 29-2. Carolina and Tampa voted against. I didn't see anything from Carolina as to why. From Tampa, it was not a health and safety thing, but Alex Killorn essentially said, look, we don't really like the format. We think for the teams that are getting essentially what turns out to be a first-round bye, as you get set for the round, you're going to be facing a team that's kind of battle-tested as much as it can be in a best-of-five. But he also said, look, we know there's no perfect format. So why do you think at the end of the day they would have voted against then?
The principle more than anything else. I mean, that's the principle of their team. I don't want to try to put words in their mouth, but I think more than anything else, just the principle of the matter. If we don't have huge eruptions of coronavirus going on, I have to think that at some point hockey will be back. If we have major eruptions and a second, you know, display of this, then I think we probably won't have hockey till next whatever, October, November, whenever. But no, I think at some point we'll probably have hockey back.
If you're Tampa, does this also just show how serious you are, Pierre, about, hey, you know what, we know this is our window. The trades were made. The table is set. We have to win a Stanley Cup?
Could be. I mean, again, I don't know. I don't want to put words in their mouth. They were really humiliated last spring. I was there. I did the series. I just did a show for it on the NHL network. So, I mean, I can just tell you that they were throttled last year by Columbus. They weren't just beaten. They were beaten down. And I'm sure that's playing on their minds a little bit, too.
Yeah, the what came to light, right, and you did those games was, I guess, either more physicality from Columbus or not enough physicality from Tampa, and they went out, they made those trades, right, brought in a little more sandpaper. Do you think they have enough now?
I do. I think Tampa's actually a very good team, and I think they learned a lot from last year. I really do. Not easy, obviously, until they play. You'll never know, but I do think that they're a better team. I think they're better prepared to compete. I think they're really angry about what happened last year, and I think it'll make a difference for them. All that being said, you never know in the playoffs. If the other team's goalie gets really hot, you could be in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things, and again, many decisions to be made yet. There are many things that need to be voted on, including health and safety protocols. So this is a small first step. But one of the things that's come up as well, Pierre, it looks very much like this so-called play-in round will be best of five. Now yes. Talk has moved to that first actual round of the playoffs. I guess maybe the second round, we'll call it, would be a best of five potentially as well. Do you think teams will go for that, or do they want to go with the traditional, we're at basically the quarterfinal stage of a best of seven in that round?
I don't know, but I would say this. If you're a really good team, you'd prefer to go best of seven, I think. It just gives you a little bit more wiggle room, and usually, not always, because we saw it last year. We saw it in 2013 with the Kings doing what they had to do. But I would say that one of the things that is really important is you have a little bit of wiggle room to be able to overcome maybe an upset in a first or a second game. Because if you don't have that extra game or two games, it's a problem. It's a big problem.
If the play-in is best of five, the first round is best of five, is this also selling too? And we have to focus on, this isn't 31 teams hunkering down for 2 months, that basically 3 weeks into it, Pierre, there's 23 of the teams that'll be home, and you're really only asking the final eight to hunker down and try to win a Stanley Cup?
Yeah, no, that's something, Sean, that a lot of people are talking about in the league, and we've talked about it on this show for a long time. Being locked into that environment for that period of time, there's some players that just don't want to do it. Some of them have young families. Some of them just, they don't want to be away from their spouse. They don't want to be away from their children. I totally understand that dynamic. You know, I've been doing it for a long time. My wife has been a superhero in our house. I can tell you that right now. When the playoffs start, I'm gone for 2 months. And I really appreciate that and respect that. And I think the players, I've had some players actually reach out to me and ask me about that experience. And I said it's something that's not easy to do, but you have to have a willing partner that's going to protect you and stand up for you. And understand it. And my children have been superior through all this. I can tell you that right now in terms of their relationship with their father. And I'm really appreciative of that. But it's definitely something that's going to be discussed, I would imagine, amongst the players for sure.
One of the things we were talking about, the fact on this day in sports history, Pierre, May 25th, the 1978 Montreal Canadiens clinched their third straight Stanley Cup. Calgary won their first on this day in 1989. Pittsburgh with Mario and that incredible move through Minnesota won their first in 1991. We're talking about how used to be, not that long ago, I guess 30 years is a bit of time ago, that you were awarding Stanley Cups at the end of May. Now we're into the mid part of June. Is there any appetite in the NHL to, I guess other than condensing the schedule, to try to finish off the Stanley Cup before, let's say, the 1st of June or the May 24th or the Memorial Day weekend if you're in the U.S.?
The first time that Stanley Cup was ever awarded after the month of May was 1992. I coached in the game. It was June 1st, Pittsburgh versus Chicago, and it was a four-game sweep. And the reason why is we had a player strike during the playoffs, believe it or not. So that's what extended the season. I don't think they'll ever go back. I do think that the league will always do it this way.
Right.
It's definitely gathered some momentum in terms of playing hockey in June. I don't know about playing in July or August. This is a unique time. But I can just tell you, I coached in the first ever game that was played in the month of June. It was June 1st, 1992, and the Pittsburgh Penguins won that game and won the Stanley Cup that night. But that was the first time that ever happened.
Does the NHL look at any window you kind of pointed to? Because summer here really doesn't start normally until kids are out of school and then ends at Labor Day. That's basically in a normal year. Don't touch that, but anything else is game?
I don't know. That's fair to ask. I don't know the answer to that. But I think because of JR made a really good point before, obviously we're in a really fluid time in our lives, all of our lives. I think anything is open for discussion. I really do. And people have, again, I watched this last night just in our neighborhood. People are definitely paying attention to different rules and what may have happened 3 or 4 months ago in terms of social distancing, wearing masks, washing their hands. It's stuff that I never would have fathomed, 3 or 4 months ago. And all of a sudden, that's become the norm. So I think anything's possible.
Mario, by the way, on that first Stanley Cup winning team for Pittsburgh, was the Conn Smythe Trophy winner.
Yes, he was. And he was in 92 as well.
Yeah.
There was discussion, who's going to win the Conn? I will never forget it, being on the ice in Old Chicago Stadium, and one of our players says, who do you think is going to win the Conn Smythe? This is after, we won.
Yeah.
And I said, if Lemieux doesn't win, there should be an investigation.
Now,
my goodness.
Probably because he won the year before, right? 44 points in 23 games that first year, including that incredible
that
goal.
Was against Minnie.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. But what was it? I mean, we've asked you this a million times, but just, to just putting Mario Lemieux out on the ice, knowing how much that one person, even at that level, could dominate the way that he could.
One of the most amazing things I ever witnessed, not just his skill level and his determination to be the best. We had a practice. I took half the team out during training camp in the 91-92 season. We had a split squad. One team went to New York to play exhibition games, and the other team went to Colorado to train at altitude. We were in Vail. And so I took the team out to Vail, and Coffey was in that group, Lemieux was in that group, Recky was in that group, Stevens was in that group. I mean, just phenomenal, phenomenal players. And our plane, we were on a commercial flight, a U.S. Air flight at the time, not on a charter. And we landed, and we didn't really have cell phones then, so we landed late. There was a delay. And I called Scotty Bowman and Craig Patrick in New York. And they said, we're late. We're probably not going to make our ice time at the arena in Vail. And they said, the players got to get on the ice. You have to get them on the ice. So I went to Mario, and I said, hey, Ace, that's his nickname. I said, Ace, we got an issue here. What are we going to do? And he says, make sure the guys eat, and I promise you we'll have a good practice. So we pull over at a fast food restaurant. I'm not kidding you. A bus load of guys, and we got some hamburgers and french fries and all that stuff. Went to Vail, checked into the hotel, went right to the rink. The trainers were unbelievable. They did a great job getting us ready. Mario Lemieux, you can ask any player that was in that practice, never saw anything like this. He raised the level of that practice to a level that nobody had ever seen before, ever. And I'm not sure they've ever seen it again from a player. It was just crazy how good he was.
Hmm. Did he have what did he have on his hamburger?
I don't know. I didn't ask him. I was sitting in the front.
All right, there you go.
I didn't pay attention.
You just paid. That's all. All right, good stuff. Always appreciate the time and the insight, Pierre. We'll look forward to chat with you again tomorrow morning. Thanks for the time.
I look forward to that as well, JR. Take care, Sean. Have a great day, everybody.
All 14 Myers locations are open for sales and service. Check out Myers pre-owned Steel of the Week at Myers.ca or just walk in. Myers, always working to keep you safe.
A good lineup of guests. Alain Vigneault tomorrow. Who else is on the list?
Wednesday, we'll have our good friend Eric Macromella. Thursday, Jeff Jackson, agent of Connor Brown, agent of Mr. Byfield to Mr. Drysdale. And then Friday, Dave Branch will join us. So nice to reach out to some people. It'll bring a whole lot of different perspectives on, what's happening in the hockey world right now.
With all due respect to Connor Brown, who is important to fans of the Ottawa Senators, Jeff Jackson, NHL player agent, probably has a Connor that most other people would be familiar
with. Very good point. Yeah, Connor McDavid.
Yes.
And cool. He was one of the front office people when I worked with the Leafs, former NHL player. Just a great guy, and it's been pretty cool. And it was, I'm going to mix up. I was about to say Bryce Harper, of course. No, it was Ben Harper that, I don't know, 6-7 years ago was Jack's first agent client. Like, it's hard to get into this industry. And that's where that's your starting out point.
People have trouble wrapping their heads around the fact that, yes, Ben Harper was his first client. Yeah. He now has a client list which starts with Connor McDavid.
Yeah, and behind the scenes, and you think of this, and I go back to Eric Lindros. When Eric Lindros was coming through and he was ready to go to the Oshawa Generals, I mean, what was going on to try to secure and working with Bonnie and Carl and trying to figure this out? It was actually Rick Curran, who was part of the Bobby Orr group, who helped out Jax. That's who ended up landing Lindros. And within a year, they fired Ricky. And I just remember him being so devastated. But to that, like when you're talking about these top dogs, the amount of recruiting that's going on. So, no, it's a hell of a way to start and has continued to build it up. And he's just a good guy. And I'm sure teams will tell you that. Players will do that. He's going to be really honest with you. But there's also not going to be a whole lot of fluff.
Yeah. And listen, player agents, like everybody else, they're kind of wondering what's going on like this and where we're going to go from here, not just in terms of playing games, but what is the landscape ahead, not only in the days, weeks, and months to come, but in the years to come as well.
And hey, you know what? You got an $80 million salary cap, 25% down to 60. What are you talking about? About $600 million in salary that goes off the books. Well, if you're an agent, got to make a little readjustment as to what my player is going to make, and that's a readjustment in my salary as well. So, yeah, hey, the trickle-down effect on the sport itself affects everybody, including the agents.
An interesting question to ask will be if you're an agent, especially for a high-end player.
Yeah.
Right now, and let's say your guy is up at the end of this year, are you locking in long term, or are you going, you know what, let's bite the bullet here, may take a little less money short term, but let's see how this plays itself out, but with no guarantees that if you take a 1 or a 2 year contract, that 2 years from now, has the sport and the money returned to the level it's at, you know, previous to all this going down?
No, it will be. And Pietrangelo, Hall, you know, a few other names, maybe Krug in Boston, Barry, I think it really will be, because this would be my personal feeling. If I'm an agent, and Petrangelo would be a real tough one, but if I could get a 7 or 8 year deal versus two, I would take two right now. I would say, hey, give me my current salary for a couple more years, and then I'll take my chances versus locking in right now. I can't imagine
now
that many teams are going to go 7 or 8 years and not be a pretty big reduction in salary.
Yeah, or okay, even if we consider 5 years to be a long-term commitment. Yeah, yeah. And Petrangelo, I mean, is a guy who's verging on 30. You know, there may be reluctance not to go long, but if you're talking about let's say a real good restricted free agent who's right in the heart of his career at 23 and 24, do you go short, or do you get locked up for those prime years at maybe a number that's we'll say, you know, a significant portion lower than the Marners and the Matthews have just signed for.
No, and it would be tough. I mean, anybody here in Ottawa, most of the focus would be a year from now or even this summer if they wanted on Brady Tkachuk. Yeah, I think it's really kind of, now your internal budget, you can kind of forecast where it's going, but no, for sure, this would be a big, big deal. And then the other part, I wonder if you're ahead of this as an agent, okay, and they say, listen, I can go out and get you $10 million a year right now, but I also know that's going to be rolled back for the first couple of years, as do the teams, because I don't think the NHL is going to roll through with this big hit on everybody and you have to get rid of players. I think what they're going to say is, hey, basically there's a 25% reduction in your salaries, so that reflects on the salary cap, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I can't imagine the Toronto Maple Leafs, hey, you're going to get hit with all six of the big boys, and you've got no money left to spend, when at the end of the day, we know through escrow by the end of the year that most of them are only going to make 75% of their salary.
Right. All right. So look forward to that. Jeff Jackson, NHL player agent, will join us on the show on Thursday. Tomorrow, Alain Vigneault, head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers, who's got, hey, they're doing so well. Simmer didn't even have them in the top four of the conference.
I know.
Didn't even remember that.
Yeah,
but
they've
had a very good year. Alain Vigneault is from Vancouver to the Rangers to now a first year in Philadelphia. We'll see how it plays itself out. Has always, you know, coached teams to, you know, a very, very high level, just hasn't been able to push it over the top to a Stanley Cup championship.
Yeah, I mean, all he does is win. And what he would have learned early in his career with stops in Montreal and St. Louis, and you get to there, no, it really is. And hey, he has got into that spot, and he tells it, Lim, I'm coming in. I'm going to push the big boys hard, right? I'm not here to make any friends. At the same time, when the guard is down, one of the most personal guys you'll meet and has one hell of a sense of humor. And if you got to bring it, bring a lot of sarcasm too.
Yeah. All right, 8:40. Five couple quick texts at 12-1200. We played the clip of Montreal winning the Stanley Cup on this day in 1978, their third consecutive championship, and it was as the countdown happened, and Bill Nyrop ends up as the guy who takes the puck behind the net as the clock counts to zero, to which Nick the Greek texts in at 12-1200. Simmer, Bill Nyrop was the backup quarterback to whom in college? Had to look this up. Notre Dame would be your school.
Oh, geez. Wow. Joe Montana?
No.
No? No idea then.
Tommy Clements.
Really?
Former Ottawa Rough Rider.
Wow, that was
back
cool.
In the
That's
day.
Cool. Yeah. When we had Dave Poulin on, I thought that was cool. He talked about, I had no idea Bill Laimbeer went to Notre Dame, and that John Paxson ended up being there. And if you go to U.S. school, almost like being in the Olympics, the way you're intertwined from a training standpoint, and even at times a housing standpoint, all the athletes are together, right? It's not just the hockey team. And that sets up for a pretty cool experience for most of these athletes.
People who follow NASCAR, I'm going to throw you under the bus for this one, because we're talking about the Coca-Cola 600.
Okay.
And you were saying it's 400 miles.
Yeah.
It's actually 600 miles. It's 400 laps.
Oh, at 1.5,
yes.
You're
yes.
Right. Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So they end up doing 600.
I thought you knew more than I did, so I went along with you, but I'm throwing you under the bus now because we got a lot of texts on that one.
Okay, Coca-Cola 400 is 600?
No, it's the Coca-Cola 600. It's 600 miles. It's 400 laps, but they don't say the 400 part.
Really?
So yeah, so the track is a mile and a half.
Okay.
NASCAR races usually in the title tell you how many miles, not how many laps it is, because like Daytona 500, I believe that's 200, 250.
Two, no, you're right.
Because I think
200.
It's 200 laps.
You're right. Correct.
Because I think the track is two.
Well, thanks for helping me out. So they went 610 miles. Wow.
That's correct. 607.
Yeah.
Longest NASCAR race ever.
Wow.
Finished just
Incredible.
After midnight our time.
All right.
Yeah. You feel even better about what they did now.
Well, no, I do. I do, because
600 miles.
I don't know how they can be that attentive to do that for that long with the danger they're factoring amongst the. What's the top end speed hammer? What are we going here?
Well, for Talladega, you're going to get up to about 220 miles per hour.
Oh, so that's only 3 hours you're there, hey? That's no big deal.
The wrecks, the cautions.
So they went 1,000 kilometers. I'm trying to think of how far is 1,000 kilometers?
Yeah, yeah.
How far of a drive? Like, how far is here to Chicago, for instance?
I don't know. We ended up doing the thing when we were talking about Khabarovsk in Russia and some of the drives. What are we doing from here to Windsor? Are we up
It's further than that.
No, I know that. But what are we up to? About 700 clicks? Then we'll go a little
further. It's 400 to Toronto.
Yeah, we want to do a little. We're going a little Columbus action.
You're
going
to have to cut your trip to Chicago down by about 220 kilometers.
Okay.
It's 1,200 kilometers from here to Chicago.
Is it? I'm feeling a little Columbus action, or we're sliding down to Pittsburgh. Something like that, but it is amazing what they're able to do.
Yeah,
for sure.
If I go into Pittsburgh though, I got to make a left turn, right? So
at
Erie,
yeah, that's
got to make
true.
That left turn down
straight,
to Pittsburgh.
Straight shot.
I guess if I'm a NASCAR driver, that's what I do. I make lots of left turns.
Exactly, going left the whole time.
We talked about Alphonso Davies putting on a show for Bayern Munich on the weekend. The 19-year-old Canadian and very much getting into the mixture of great Canadian soccer players, which starts with Christine Sinclair, and then we kind of went, well, you know what? For the casual sports fan, not the big soccer fan. How many more soccer players could you name? Immediately got a text on Bob Leonard Doozy.
Yeah.
Of course, you can't remember, I can't forget that name. Owen Hargreaves. Remember when that was a big deal? What is Owen, who is our Owen Hargreaves going to play for?
Well,
Canada or England?
Yeah, is he a kid from Calgary?
And then he ended up playing for England, right? And I don't know that he ever quite lived up to expectations, right?
Probably. Was he ever a starter on England? He always came off the bench, right?
I think so.
Filled in during the second half.
Yeah.
And the Leonard Doozy fella, did he end up coaching the national team later as well?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Anybody from Vancouver eventually did.
Yeah, no, that was the first name that I thought of, and I actually do not recall any of his. What was the last year that we qualified? 84?
86
for the World
is
Cup?
The only 86? Year we've done it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't was
score
Big
a goal.
Bob on the team?
I'm going to say yes.
He better be.
I'll go with
if
yes.
If you're going to say notoriety, wherever the star of the team in 86 was, let's go with him.
Here we go. Ottawa to Sudbury return is 1,000 kilometers, somebody says.
Oh, a little run up to Sudbury.
Yeah, and back. Okay. But then you got to stop, right? You got to stop at the chip truck near Mattawa.
Right? Or you know what? You probably go right into Deep River for a nice open... whatever those sandwiches
open face
are.
Sandwich?
Yeah, a little turkey open face sandwich.
Yeah.
Those hot sandwiches that makes the bread all soggy. Yeah. Those are disgusting.
What I know you're not doing is you're not stopping in North Bay. You're going right through North Bay. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I know Don Brennan, that's his hometown. He's listening right now, and he knows I'm right on that too.
Yeah. And the same when I played in the Sioux. Everybody tells you it's unbelievable in the summer. Well, everywhere on the planet is, including the taiga in Russia. Show me what it's like here in January. Because there's no bad places on the planet in the summer. We know that.
Yeah, exactly. All right. 8:50. So the match, we talked about it with Pierre. Pierre really liked it too. I haven't really seen a whole lot of people that have panned the match, the big celebrity and charity golf event yesterday with Tiger and Phil and Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, which don't want to bury the lead, as they say in the newspaper business, raised $20 million, which
incredible.
Is a phenomenal amount of money for COVID relief. All the guys donated all their appearance fees, et cetera, to make sure that this thing raised a pile of money. Which was the most important thing at the end of the day. But it was an event that really just came off really well, probably due to the fact that Tom Brady became human because he could not hit a golf ball straight for the first six holes. In fact, on the seventh hole, a par five, he hits it straight right off the tee. So he's three off the tee, does get his second tee shot into the fairway. So now he's hitting in, which would be his fourth shot with the penalty. And Charles Barkley, who's doing the commentary, who's got the terrible golf swing and the terrible golf game, is in his ear and he's giving it to him.
Come on, man. I'm going to give you some shots, man. I want all some right. of you.
Chuck, I've been focusing on football, bro. I'm trying to win a Super Bowl.
Ready to dominate.
Got it'll turn on. Don't worry. It ain't over yet.
I think you just made him mad, Chuck.
Oh, no. I love it, though, man. He can take a joke.
Oh,
yeah. Get it,
oh,
go in!
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness!
Oh, you made it!
Wow!
Chuck.
Hey, man,
Chuck.
I got that's Chuck. Awesome.
Shut your mouth, Chuck. Take a little of that medicine.
There you go. There, shut your mouth, Chuck. Suck it, Chuck, I think he said, Tom Brady. You can tell.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, again, these guys are super competitive.
Oh,
they don't want to be embarrassed. Yeah. And you could tell that Tom Brady, just in watching his body language, was like, my God, I am embarrassing myself out here. And then he throws down, he holes out from the fairway on the seventh hole.
Yeah, and also as far as the 8.5 handicap, he's a stand-up guy. I think he was told to do that just so that the match would look, hey, you're going to have some fun with it. No doubt, and this must be where, hey, you're an athlete, you got a big mouth, and I'm sure you can relate, or anybody can. When these pro athletes come in, they must have their change belts ready to accept their cash, right? Where they realize...
What's my appearance fee?
No, I mean in the sense of you start playing, you start gambling.
Oh, okay.
And the golfer knows...
Phil, for sure.
And the golfer knows that, this guy here thinks he's got it. And then all of a sudden you get the old, hey, I want to double down. Hey, got to get down by 10 G's. You start getting a little cocky. Then you say, let's do it for 20. That's where I can't even imagine the money that's been taken from some of these guys over the years, because they can't turn off the competitive part, and even more so when they're down.
That's the challenge, right? That was Michael Jordan too, right? To put some... The only challenge really is, and it isn't about posting your best score, it's about having money on the line.
Yeah,
right.
Well, for sure.
Which for everybody is the ultimate inducement. So.
Yeah, and how you'll react when you really get to the pressure point where, hey, for a Michael Jordan or case of Brady right there, yeah, react in a positive way. For other guys, they may be okay. Now all of a sudden they're standing over that putt that could put them down 20 grand and they're nervous and can't get her done.
So Drew Brees and Sergio Garcia were on Twitter and we got next, so they want to take on the winner. So
Are you feeling that one?
Well, no, I don't think so. No. I think this one worked. And it's not that I'd like to see, I like Drew Brees as a guy. Yeah. I've always been a big Sergio fan, even though Americans hate him for the most part.
Yeah.
It's the Vachon Cakes theory. I don't know if I've given you guys the Vachon Cakes theory.
Maybe once or twice.
Yeah, too much of a good thing is not a good thing.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we need to see another one in the short term. And hopefully by the time that maybe it seems appropriate, that maybe we're actually playing real golf by then.
Yeah, is there any other... We'll leave it only to football and golf, just to kind of keep the pattern. Is there any other duo that you could think of that you'd enjoy seeing?
Well, I'll tell you what. Like Justin, for those that watch, Justin Thomas, who's one of the best players in the world, was the on-course reporter yesterday, and he was fantastic.
Okay.
Like, he was really good. He's glib. He asks the right questions. He talks at the right time. All that other stuff.
Yeah.
He's got a hell of a game, too. So if I say, okay, Justin Thomas would be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Somebody I wouldn't want to see is Brooks Koepka. Like, he's more boring than Tiger Woods.
Oh, no, for sure.
Right? But he's a freaking robot
the combo
out there.
Right off the hop, and I didn't know who the golfer would be. I'm pulling in Tony Romo all day long.
Okay, so, right? So there we go. So Romo and Justin Thomas.
Yeah,
so that'd be a hell of a combo.
And Romo's a hell of a golfer, right?
Yeah, yes.
And so to me, how much fun would that be? So, no, you'd have to. Hey, it's also for the charity component of it. Can you mix it up a little bit here in Canada? If we're asking, we'd probably ask at some point, would you have Brooke Henderson involved, right? Like,
right.
There's things, but also I don't know that how many corporations you're not going to, hey, every second week or every month, hey, this was a one-off. It was well done. It was $20 million. Maybe when the networks see the ratings, and if it is popular enough, I mean, that always drives the engine, but we'll see.
I don't want to see Phil removed from it, though. That's the only thing.
Yeah,
I understand
Should
Tiger
be just the partner leaves, right? The golfer stays, but Tom, you're off the island, eh?
Maybe. Or
you're
maybe just
home.
Tiger leaves and we see Mickelson and Peyton Manning as the tag team here. I think that would be quite a dynamic duo.
They were the best. In fact, one thing, I watched the entire thing, that's how much I was enamored by it. They didn't go to Peyton Manning enough. Because speaking of glib and just a fun and funny guy, they didn't go to Peyton, I didn't think, enough. Phil was all over it. Like, he couldn't shut up, you know, but in an entertaining way. Tom Brady was entertaining because he was so bad for most of it. And Tiger Woods was Tiger Woods, right? He's a pretty boring guy, hits great golf shots, but not that great a personality. And one of the things they did, and this is all good, I don't want to diminish what they did, but they all had their own specialized golf carts. All tricked up in their own way, logoed, autographed, all that other stuff. And one of the things they did was they opened it up for auction. You could bid on that, and then sort of this all-in-one challenge that we're seeing a lot of celebrities and sports people, entertainers, or whatever do these unique experiences. So Tiger Woods and Phil did it as well. So you get my golf cart, you bid on it, and then there's an experience that goes along with it. So Phil. He'll fly out to some tournament or whatever, and you get to play 18 holes of golf with him as well.
Wow.
For Tiger, it was a putting lesson.
Oh,
now, again, I don't want to diminish. He did something, but that doesn't show you the difference in the two. Like, Phil.
By
and
Tiger's
listen,
coach, not Tiger. Tiger won't be there.
But has that not been Tiger's struggle since he returned with his putter?
It's, no? Yeah, so it's just, that kind of say, you know, it's like Tiger's like, okay, I got half an hour for you.
Yeah.
Phil's like, I got 5 hours for you.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
So, yeah, it is. Anyway, fun event and lots of money raised, and it's starting to sense a little bit of, and just in terms of the return to sports now, we got, well, NASCAR's been back for a few weeks. UFC has been back for a couple of weeks. We were seeing soccer return in Germany and soon to be back, I think, in England by next month. The golf tour, the PGA Tour, resumes, I think, on June the 11th, I believe it is. So, and again, we'll find out what happens with the NHL, the NBA, and MLB probably within the next few weeks as to whether they're going to return at some point in the summer.
Yeah, and engaging the popularity. They had a live camera down in the Ozarks. A watch party they had was unreal.
Like, isn't that incredible? Hey, listen, we're not with what we saw at the park in Toronto on Saturday. Well, I'm not sure we're that much further ahead.
No, let's change this to open borders. If we're going to build a wall, let's build it around the GTA to protect them and continue. That should actually make them part of the United States.
Yeah.
Hey?
Yeah. I think we're doing, just in terms of caseloads and stuff, we're doing great here in Ottawa.
Yeah.
I think the last couple of days on the weekend, 8 and 9 cases respectively, awesome. Which is really great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, we got a long, tough road ahead. All right, 8:58, we'll take a break, get you the latest news from 580 CFRA. And when we come back, Matthew Barnaby, former NHLer, he's always got lots of fun opinions. He'll join us in the next little bit, and we'll get into much more as we continue along here on a Monday morning. You are listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.